ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद् भागवतम् 7th canto chapter 13 The Behavior of a Perfect Person text 27 Sukham asyatmano rupam sarveo paratisthanu manasam sparshajan drishtva bhogan svapsyami samvisham Sukham asyatmano rupam sarveo paratisthanu manasam sparshajan drishtva bhogan svapsyami samvisham Sukham asyatmano rupam sarveho paratisthanu manasam sparshajam drishtva bhogan svapsyami samvisham The actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. Therefore, considering this subject matter, I have ceased from all material activities and am lying down here. Purport. The difference between the philosophy of the Mayavadis and that of the Vaishnavas is explained herein. Both the Mayavadis and Vaishnavas know that in materialistic activities there is no happiness. The Mayavadi philosophers, therefore, adhering to the slogan Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya, want to refrain from false materialistic activities. They want to stop all activities and merge in the Supreme Brahman. According to the Vaishnava philosophy, however, if one simply ceases from materialistic activity, one cannot remain inactive for very long. And therefore, everyone should engage himself in spiritual activities which will solve the problem of suffering in this material world. It is said, therefore, that although the Mayavadi philosophers strive to refrain from materialistic activities and merge in Brahman, and although they may actually merge in the Brahman existence, for want of activity, they fall down again into materialistic activity. Ahuya krishchena param param tata patantiyata. Thus, the so-called renouncer, unable to remain in meditation upon Brahman, returns to materialistic activities by opening hospitals and schools and so on. Therefore, simply cultivating knowledge that materialistic activities cannot give one happiness and that one should consequently cease from such activities is insufficient. One should cease from materialistic activities and take up spiritual activities. Then the solution to the problem will be achieved. Spiritual activities are activities performed according to the order of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. If one does whatever Krishna says, his activities are not material. For example, when Arjuna fought in response to the order of Krishna, his activities were not material. Fighting for sense gratification is a materialistic activity, but fighting by the order of Krishna is spiritual. By spiritual activities, one becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead, and then enjoy blissful life eternally. Here in the material world, everything is but a mental concoction that will never give us real happiness. The practical solution, therefore, is to cease from materialistic activities and engage in spiritual activities. Yat yat tat karmano nyatra loko yang karma bandhanaha. If one works for the sake of pleasing the Supreme Lord, Yajna, or Vishnu, one is in liberated life. If one fails to do so, however, he remains in a life of bondage. Repeat after me. the actual form of life for the living entities.
The actual form of life for the living entities
is one of spiritual happiness.
Which
is real happiness.
This happiness can be achieved
only when one stops all materialistic activities. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. Therefore, considering this subject matter, I have ceased from all material activities and am lying down here. Om Ajnana Chimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Navitam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastani Prabhu
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
The Python Man is giving you his conclusion and his practical solution. What are you going to do? This is the central question in Bhagavad Gita. What is Arjuna going to do after having Lord Krishna maneuver the chariot in between the two armies? What is he going to do? Krishna is there. The material situation is there, which is very powerful. Relatives, friends, former teachers, how can you fight with them? The situation looks very bewildering for the material intelligence. So bewildering that indeed Arjuna says, no matter what I do, it's going to be a problem. Therefore, best not to do anything. I shall not fight. Vipaditani Keshava. I just see only the opposite will come to us if we fight. There'll be sin. There'll be no happiness. Kim no rajena bhogena. Kim bhogajiva tenava. There won't be anything good to come of this. He became overwhelmed by his material analysis of the situation. So much so that he forgot Krishna is right there with him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Achyuta, the infallible one, is his chariot driver. And Krishna smiled, thinking, just see how powerful my illusory energy is. Arjuna is right here on the chariot with me. He's my eternal associate. And still he's falling into Maya. Just see how powerful this is. There's no other solution to this predicament than to take instruction from beyond the material realm of affairs. To hear from Krishna, to hear from Krishna's representative, and then to engage in spiritual activities. Otherwise, there's no way out of these paradoxes and bewildering perplexities of life that constantly come. Everyone dreams of a fairy tale life. They'll go to school and they'll travel and they'll work and a rewarding, fulfilling job with high pay. And then when the time is right, after partying, they'll settle down into a very nice home in Remuera, and they'll have a perfect family life consisting of the man who does what whatever he wants, the woman who does whatever she wants, then they have children that do whatever they want. This way, life will be peaceful and satisfied. This is the illusion. You can't become surprised that the conditioned soul dreams like this. It's part of contact with material nature. This dreaminess, this tendency to hallucinate, comes about as soon as you're in contact with material nature. So don't scratch your heads, don't be bewildered. oh, why am I thinking this way? Why are these thoughts in my mind? What is the cause? Karanam guna sangasya sarasa yoni jamasya. Because you're in contact with material nature. Therefore, the mind fills up with all these delusions. It's like living here with Sukadeva and Varshava. You can see their heads fill up with these ideas, and they do them. The adults, of course, know these things are silly and that the children will outgrow them. But for the children, they're so real. I was watching when the kids come home from school, especially when it's Friday, yeah, no more school for 2 days, they immediately race out to the trampoline and jump up and down. They just jump and jump for half hour, just feeling ecstasy. So in their mind, this is going to be pleasing, this is going to be relief. Now adults have their own way of doing those same things. You know, an adult doesn't come home from work and just go out on the trampoline and jump up and down and think, okay, now I'm happy. As you become older, your plans and needs become more complex due to the influence of material nature and due to the change of your body and mind. But it's the same principle. I gotta have some release. I gotta enjoy. We were speaking the other day about how it's the natural tendency when you work an 8-hour day for somebody else, adopting someone else's priorities, someone else's vision, and you have to please that person, those persons. As soon as you get home, you're thinking, okay, now it's time for me. So immediately, you want to do things that will please you, and you know you've just got a short time. You got to squeeze in some sleep, and then it's back to action in the morning. So when you come home in the evening, you're ready to please yourself. Look at TV. What else can you do? Do you have anybody around who can gratify your senses? I've got to indulge to satisfy me. Well, this is the way material nature pushes you. As stated in this verse, mana samsparshaja jan. There's something produced in the mind by the demands for sense gratification. Try to understand how much of your life is subject to these demands coming from your body and mind. And the mind, of course, is the central clearing place for all these pushings. Just see how you're being moved around, pushed around. No one likes to be pushed around. Have you ever had an experience of someone just coming up to you and pushing you? Yeah, it's a very disturbing feeling. Sometimes young boys do that to each other. You know, they challenge each other, push you. What are you going to do about it? It happened to me. I remember as a school kid, 11 or 12, 13. You know, the neighborhood bully would just come up to you and just, you know, push you. You don't like it? What are you going to do about it? And of course, you knew he was the neighborhood bully, so you couldn't fight back. You just had to swallow it. Well, that's what material nature does to you. It just pushes you. Now, what are you going to do about it? Go on. Go try to enjoy. And work to enjoy. Come on. Pushes you. And what do you think? As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, ahankara vimutatma kritaham iti manyate. This is all coming from me. This is my program. This is my vision. You don't understand, you're just infected by the modes of material nature. Therefore, your head spins. These things require some deep contemplation. That's why the Python man here says, Bhogan Sapshami Sangvishan. I'm sitting here silently, thinking deeply about all this. That is required to have a successful life. You can't become so caught up in these artificial demands and you're fulfilling them without having ample space to just think about the process of material existence and what's working on you, what's demanding of you. People, even when they rarely get free time and free space, they don't know what to do with it. Immediately they fill it up with some trivial activity because they don't know how to think. They're not trained how to inquire into the processes of material existence. They're not trained to think conclusively about life. Therefore, even they have a peaceful time, a few spare moments, or an opportunity, a situation for contemplation, and they don't know what to do with it. But the Python Man is showing. You think deeply about material activities and their result. What is the point? Look before you leap. As you're speaking the other day, understand that the promise of material nature is never fulfilled. The results you get are always the opposite. Now, where is that culture? Where is that civilization that's giving people an opportunity to do just what the Python Man is doing, sitting silently, thinking deeply about these very important points? That civilization's not here. So we have to be mindful of how we're, as devotees, we're affected by our environment. The environment we live in is not supportive of spiritual development. Knowing that, you'll be a lot less sentimental. You're operating in a hostile environment. You don't have any very bad neighborhoods here in Auckland, but still sometimes there's a bit of crime, and sometimes some sections are known to be rougher than others. What young lady here would go walking in Otara or Otahuhu alone 1 o'clock in the morning? Hey? Why not? Because you know it's dangerous. If you were in such a situation, you'd be very tense, looking here, looking there, clutching your mobile phone, you know. Yeah. Anyone ever had an experience of walking in a tough part of the city and you notice your consciousness? Yeah. Or if you go to India and you know, you're in a crowded train station, you know you've got to be very careful. All sorts of things can happen at any moment. Here's one thing that happened right out in front of the gates of the Mayapur Temple. On the road, right in front at the main gate. Lady was carrying her bags, lady devotee. And all of a sudden, she felt her back of her neck itching like anything. Oh, ferociously. So, she saw a water fountain nearby or something, and she just put her bags down. The itch was so great. You know, put some water on the back of her neck, came back, bags are gone. What do you think happened?
Somebody put some sort of itching cream.
Itching powder, yes, they do that. It was just fill some itching powder on the back of your neck, and you just have to scratch. You let go of your bags, and they're gone. So those who know how these things can happen in India, you know, they're always alert. I remember I was waiting on a train platform. Where is it? In Delhi, to take the train to Mathura, and so I had my shoulder bags at my feet. You know. There was nobody within maybe 2 meters of me. Still, I knew anything is possible. So while I was just standing there, I felt the tiniest, slightest nudge on my back. Enough, you know, just it was expertly done. Just enough that you would just immediately. But I knew. I just looked straight ahead, and there, right in front of me, appearing, who had appeared so gently, like as if by mystic power, was a man. So I just, instead of turning my head to look behind me, I just looked straight at him. And he kind of just, you know, covered, you know, kind of moved his eyes. Expert! It's the slightest nudge I felt in my back. The thieves are very sensitive to your mental movements. Much more subtle than the thieves here. The thieves here don't have these subtle powers. But just a slight nudge. It was a, you know, it was an abrupt nudge. You would act abruptly, but they wanted a subtle nudge, just so I would very slowly turn my head. In other words, not a threat, but I would be curious, what is this? Yeah. It was an abrupt nudge, I would just go, but just a subtle nudge just would put me in the right mood to slowly turn my head, without feeling threatened, continue to be at ease, and in a second, the other guy would have been gone with my bed. But I knew, don't do that, don't look away. So instead of turning my head, I just looked straight ahead at this guy who had so gently and so effortlessly appeared before me, seemingly out of nowhere. I just looked straight at him. And he just kind of, he kind of looked away. Like so, why aren't we like that about material existence? What is in us that produces such a casual attitude towards material life? It's not so bad, and I don't have to be on guard. And you know, sometimes the devotees are just too much with their, you know, alert attitude about the dangers of material life. I mean, when are we just going to relax and just, you know, be comfortable and be more natural? Why always on alert? But look where you are. You're in the oppressive material atmosphere. Now, does that mean because devotees are always on alert that they're in a sense of anxiety, they're on edge, they're biting their fingernails? Gotta be alert. It's everywhere. No, it means you have to learn how to chill out, how to relax in devotional service. Everything is possible in Krishna consciousness, even relaxing, unwinding. You have to know how to do that on the spiritual platform. That's why the association of devotees is so important. Sooner or later, you're going to understand that you need devotees even to unwind and relax. Because in the association of devotees, Krishna is firmly in the center. And then, because Krishna is in the center, your natural self comes out. The great mistake is to think, I'm feeling pressure, I'm feeling anxiety, let me get away from the devotees. That's a great mistake. It looks very intelligent. Being around devotees really gets to be a problem. But getting away, the problems will decrease. What happens as soon as you get away? You realize the big problem you're carrying with you is your own mind. And your own mind gives you no peace. Finally, you get so harassed by your own mind that if you're humble, you come crawling back to the devotee. That's why we say there's no peace in this world. Not possible. Peace is found in service to Krishna, in hearing and chanting about Krishna. As you become more mature in spiritual life, you'll understand you need devotees just to have peace. It's not that peace is just something out there in the material world waiting for you to get. No. Only the promise is there of that. Just like so many political activists and government leaders are always talking about world peace. You notice they never get it. They just spend a lot of time talking about it. There's always this war here, that war there, here a war, there a war. But still, world peace. It's just something you talk about. It never comes. Similarly, the living entity as an individual wants peace. We'll build a world of our own. Of course, no one can stay alone. So then the hope is they'll be a partner for you, and together you will make peace. But the Python Man already told you. Seeing the contrary results of that endeavor, I've stopped it all. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, you may remember that Krishna says the true spiritual person puts abominable activities far distant from him. Why? Because anything, whether good action or bad action, that doesn't result in devotional service to the Lord is considered abominable. There's a reaction, whether it's a so-called good activity or so-called bad activity, there's a reaction. This is what people do not think about today, the reactions to their actions. They actually think that because they think good of themselves and think nicely of their activities, therefore the result has to be nice. There's no understanding of the overall system of action and reaction. Therefore, when Krishna says, keeping abominable activities distant from you, sometimes people, they just become irritated by this. Why is everything except devotional service considered to be a waste of time? Well, that's why you have to understand Bhagavad Gita. You can read it again and again and again. It's the greatest handbook for how to live in this world and achieve the supreme destination. There's nothing like Bhagavad Gita. Such a concise one volume. And of course, Bhagavatam expands upon Bhagavad Gita. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita expands upon the ultimate goal of life, love of God. Now, the Python Man says material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. I wonder how many of you think about that. It's a concoction. Just like I can watch Sukadev and Varshana concoct so many activities. Once I was watching, Varshana didn't know I was watching. So there was a car parked there. So she went out the door right here and was doing some kind of special dancing and watching her reflection on the car. She was moving her face and like that. And then she realized I was watching her. And she was, you know, very embarrassed. Later I asked her, what is it you're doing? What were you dancing? She said it was her special kind of personal version of Bharat Natyam dance. I thought it was some kind of hip hop, but anyway, she called it her own version of Bharat Natyam dance. So I can see she's concocting pleasure in this way. Yeah. Let me look at myself. Looking at your reflection on the car, you know, and well, you thought no one was looking, so I was going to enjoy that way. So now I was thinking, what's the difference between the child and the adult? The adult, they do the same things. They look at something and they concoct enjoyment. It's all imaginary. You all would immediately agree that what Varshana was doing is simply imaginary. Of course, you're really sentimental. You say, but she's acting on the eternal child within. Something that we all aspire for. To once again live eternal childhood. Unlocking the inner child. Aside from all that, it's just a concoction. She's just imagining. It's like last night when Junyatra, Rasyatra's mother and father are here. So I came down to say hello because I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. And everyone was seated at the table, Sukadeva, Varshana, Junyatra, Rasyatra, and the mother and the father. So, and Sukadeva was just busy just talking, big words that had no meaning. And his grandmother and grandfather, they were, just completely all ears, they were very attentive. They just considered it to be so important. And of course, the more that they respond that way, the more Sukadev felt obliged to continue on that way. Just speaking big words that meant nothing. He didn't even know what he was talking about. But just the fact he had an audience, he was going to enjoy in this way. And so, and they were contributing to all that. And this way, everyone's thinking, this is such a nice time. It's a Thursday night. We'll go visit our grandchildren and hear them speak nonsense. So this is all concocted. This is all imaginary. You can see that, but can you see all aspects of material enjoyment as imaginary? That is the question. The Python man says, considering this subject, I'm sitting silently thinking deeply about all these things. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that when you give up all desires for sense gratification that are born out of concoction, it's a mental concoction. Our whole situation in material existence is a mental concoction. If you can understand the power of your mind to concoct, to imagine, to create something that's actually not there. It's always nice, every time material desires strike you, to ask yourself, why am I concocting this? What is the purpose of this concoction? And where will this concoction lead? Without Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita, we'll never be able to develop the necessary self-reflection so that we can stop ourselves from engaging in the cycle of repeated birth and death. We don't want to perform activities that implicate ourselves. It's as plain as that. And when you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes that so clear. Stop activities that will implicate yourself in the cycle of repeated birth and death. Otherwise, as Prabhupada writes in one purport, you are condemned to undergo the processes of material existence. Think about that. Condemned to undergo the processes of material existence. Now, all of material existence is unnecessary. It's a dream. But even liberation is unnecessary, and it's a dream. How can that be? This is explained by Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Ajnana Sangha Bhava Bandha Moksha. Both bondage and liberation are imaginary. For one who is situated in true knowledge, he or she can understand that. Just like when you're situated on the sun planet, there's no question of day or night. When you're situated in your spiritual glory, what is the question of liberation or bondage? In other words, the pure spirit soul is always established in its spiritual glory. It's just that in contact with the illusory energy, a dreamlike state comes about. But that doesn't nullify the eternal nature of the soul. It's just that because of contact with the illusory energy, a dream is produced. But otherwise, the pure spirit soul is always pure. This is an answer Maitreya gave to Vidura in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. He explained that pure soul is always pure consciousness and never out of consciousness due to any kind of circumstances, situations, dreams, whatever. But apparently there's a disruption caused by the external energy. That disturbance happens because the conditioned soul identifies with the body. So there are two things you have to understand that are going on simultaneously in conditioned life. The pure soul is there in its full glory, but something from the outside is influencing a dream-like condition. Therefore, Lord Brahma says, both liberation and bondage are illusion. If you're a pure spirit soul, what's the question of you ever being bound? And if you're a pure spirit soul, what's the question of you ever being liberated? Just like if you live on the sun, there's no such thing as day or night. So how is this... How is the illusion managed? Simply by the contact with material energy. Because although we're pure spirit soul, we're not as powerful as Krishna, we can become overwhelmed by the external energy. Even with the super soul there in our heart. That's another question asked by Vidura to Maitreya. How could it be that the living entity in material life, accompanied by the super soul from body to body, still tries to suffer and enjoy? still experience suffering and enjoyment. How can that be? The super soul is there. Of course, we know that the living entity has independence. The super soul does not interfere with your independence. It's all a question, ultimately, about love. The best love comes when there's free choice, independence. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He knows how to get the best love. Therefore, to produce a situation of voluntarily reclaiming your love for him, Krishna has provided this material world. It's actually a love training ground for Krishna. But we think, oh, I'm going to be Krishna and I'm getting all the love for me. And in this way we perpetuate our existence here. As soon as you recognize that the material world is a training ground to love Krishna, then things start to click. Another explanation that Maitreya gave to Vidura in the third canto is that all the miseries of the living entity are managed by the external energy, but the actual living entity, the pure soul, is not touched. Actually, there's not even a connection between the pure soul and the material mind and body. That's stated in the Vedas. Asanga Gaya Purusha. There's actually no connection between the material contaminated layers and the pure soul. There's just an imaginary connection. The junction where that imaginary connection is the false ego. That the false ego imagines that matter and spirit are together. That you, the pure spirit soul, are now part of material arrangements. It's all an imagination. This way you need to see both things going on at the same time. The pure spirit soul is existing, and the external energy is existing. If you take shelter Krishna, then the external energy doesn't harass you. Therefore, our life's goal is how to increase our taking shelter Krishna. Indeed, there's nothing to be liberated from in the absolute sense. Just like when you're living on the sun, there's no question of night. You're always in the light. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoy Andakar. Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like the darkness. Wherever there is Krishna, there is no Maya. In this way, a devotee is constantly refining his or her lifestyle so there's more and more Krishna, so that the Krishna sun rises higher and higher in life. It's a constant effort. It's not something you do for a few years and then retire. It's the eternal quest for increasing your love for Krishna. And of course, Krishna appreciates your struggle to be more Krishna conscious. You, as a tiny little part of Krishna, you appreciate it so much if someone is struggling to please you. Everyone here would be like that. Everyone hopes for relationships like that for themselves, right? Wouldn't it be nice that there'll be someone who's always struggling to please me? Wouldn't it be nice that there's someone who's always struggling to care for me and be considerate about me? Isn't that the dream? That someone who just is responsive to me at every moment, who knows how I'm feeling, I don't have to say anything. And you would be so appreciative of such a person. So obviously Krishna appreciates your effort. As a supreme person, Krishna knows. Just see this devotee constantly trying to reshape his or her life for making the Krishna sun be more and more prominent. Krishna can see that. He's not hard-hearted. He's a super soul in the heart. He's impressed. And he gives you more and more intelligence how to go back to Godhead. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. So let's try to understand what we're doing. We're engaged in the ongoing process of making our lives more and more Krishna conscious. That's what's happening. So what if sometimes it's a bit of struggle? Ask any married couple. Isn't it so? Sometimes in a relationship there's a struggle. Is it all just sugar candy? Now, sometimes, you know, tough moments, you got to work it out. So why is it that we're afraid of struggling Krishna consciousness? Actually, there's a qualitative difference between struggling to please Krishna and struggling to please your senses. But in our immature state, we confuse the two. Oh, struggling, I know what that's all about. I struggled in Maya before. Why do I have to struggle for Krishna? It's actually impersonalism. Think about it and you'll see it's impersonalism. Just like all personalities are Maya, similarly all struggles are Maya. This is Mayavada. Whereas the Vaishnava acharyas are always glorifying struggling for Krishna. Like Prabhupada said in his last months, I just want the chance to struggle for Krishna, to fight for Krishna, to die on the battlefield. It's glorious. But because we're influenced by impersonalism, maybe in a dormant way, we think all struggle is automatically unenlivening. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that he counts all his apparent trials and tribulations in devotional service as a blissful gift from the Lord. An opportunity to love, to show more love. Krishna knows how to bring the greatest love out of us. But because we are tinged by impersonalism, we think automatically all struggle is unwanted. All struggle is bad. I came to Krishna consciousness to stop struggling. If that's so, then basically, you might as well say you came to Krishna consciousness to stop living. Life will always be a struggle, but not all struggles are the same. Not all deaths are the same. There's a great difference between the death process of a devotee and a non-devotee. To the external vision, it looks the same. But to the internal, from the internal point of view, completely different. So why do we have this idea in our head that struggle is unwanted, struggle is bad? If you're struggling, it means you're not becoming Krishna conscious. It's a great opportunity to struggle for Krishna. Now, the process of bhakti yoga, as pointed out in this purport, does not end in just cultivating knowledge that materialistic activities cannot give one happiness, and consequently ceasing from such activities. That is not bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga means engaging in activities to please Krishna. So when you're feeling the pinch from material nature, when you're feeling like you're becoming dry, when you're feeling like your heart is weakening, what do? You take more shelter of spiritual activities. Every ashram has to learn how to do that. Whether you're brahmachari, sannyasi, grihastha, whatever, you have to learn how to respond when you start to feel a bit dry, start to feel a bit contaminated by the illusory energy. You have to know how to respond. Just like in the police department, in the fire department, so much time is spent how to respond when the alarm sounds. When there's an emergency, what's the emergency number here?
111.
When 111, you know, when someone dials 111, whoever picks up, they're trained how to respond. At a good business, the personnel are always trained how to respond to the customers. How to respond. Like when I got my laptop back from the IBM service center. Well, they're famous for their customer service. So, you know, I called and asked, is it ready now? It'll be ready in ten more minutes. Everything is fine. Your machine is happy now. They're trained like that. even give you an emotional response. Your machine is happy now. So you're happy. That's training. How are they trained? At IBM, they're trained that a problem with a customer is a chance to make a lifetime customer. So they do the overkill. They look at a problem as a chance how to build a lifelong relationship with you. So you bring your machine in to them. You know, normally you're a bit angry. Yeah, I just got this computer. It's got a problem with it. And they just take it as an opportunity how to build a lifelong relationship with you. So, why can't we do devotional service in that way? Taking our struggles as a chance how to further our lifelong relationship with Krishna. Krishna knows that. That's why Krishna does it. The so-called challenges, the so-called struggles, they're Krishna scheming to get more love out of you, out of our hard hearts. It's like, you know, getting water out of a stone most of the time. But Krishna knows how to do it. He's a Supreme Personality Godhead, and we're his parts and parcels. So all the challenging situations, the struggles, are there to produce more love. Krishna knows better than us how to get that love. We need to know how to respond when crises in spiritual life are there. You're feeling exhausted, you're feeling dry, you're feeling this, that. This happens from time to time. But if you know how to respond, then you take full advantage of that situation to increase your bhakti. And the true response is always an increase in your spiritual activities. That's always the true response. Now it's true, I agree, not every devotee is going to be able to, doesn't want to take the true solutions. Therefore, as temporary pacifying measures, we offer various material arrangements. But you should understand, these temporary pacifiers are not the real solution. The real solution is the increase in the devotional activities. Krishna is very practical. That's why Krishna has authored the Varnashram system, to give people a chance to gradually break free from illusion in an authorized way. That's why you have the ashramas, the four ashramas. All four ashramas are simply in relation to sex. Some have, one has it limited, the others don't have it at all. It's a chance how to cope with the material contamination in a way that you get purified, not putrefied. And then the varnas, these are occupational propensities. How to organize your occupational propensities so that you can act on them in such a way that you don't get bondage. That's the Varnashram system. It comes from Krishna. The Varnashram system is not meant for Paramahansas. It's meant for those who are conditioned so they can gradually find firm ground in spiritual life. But you don't have a Varnashram system now. You're living in a material environment that's completely unfavorable for spiritual development. Of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted that somehow, not only Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they wanted that the Varnashram system revive in the world, because it's Krishna's own material system for how people can be peaceful while gradually making spiritual progress. That system is not there. Therefore, the only thing that compensates is the holy name of Krishna. That will make up for all the lacks, all the discrepancies, all the glaring deficiencies. Once you understand that, then you're nicely situated in Krishna consciousness. Yes, there are deficiencies. Yes, there are discrepancies. Yes, there are contradictions. Everything is resolved by the holy name of Krishna. Therefore, sometimes Srila Prabhupada, when speaking about the ideal of Varnashram society, he would notice devotees like getting a bit depressed, like, oh, we just don't have that facility. And then Srila Prabhupada would say, just chant Hare Krishna. Now, it's true that we do want to try to fashion proper material arrangements so that people can have good footing for becoming Krishna consciousness. But while that's not there, and even if it is there, still we have to take shelter of the holy name. That's why the Bhagavatam says, for someone who executes Varnashram Dharma perfectly but hasn't developed any attraction for hearing about Krishna, they've missed the point so much that their position is hellish. Their position is known as hellish. We are not simply about ceasing material activities. We are about increasing our attachment for Krishna. When there's a crisis in your spiritual life, if at that moment you choose activities for more attachment to Krishna, you'll always remember that victory. You can turn the darkness into the light just by that choice. I know I'm feeling down. I know I'm feeling dry. I know I'm feeling weak. I choose more Krishna. You'll never forget that. And Krishna will never forget it also. Just like in relationships, people like it when, you know, they're having a bit of a tough time, and then all of a sudden, you know, one of the persons in the relationship says, never mind all this has happened, never mind how I'm feeling, I choose you ever more than before. And it's natural human nature. Wow. Yeah. Makes you feel good. Well, what about Krishna? And, of course, no tiny living entity bewildered by material energy can reciprocate like Krishna can reciprocate. So Krishna's watching what you're going to choose, because love is all about choice. You're feeling a little weak, you're feeling a little pressure, you're feeling a little irritable. Now the devotees, choose more Krishna, and Krishna's watching. And you never forget such a victorious moment. And our whole spiritual life is a sequence of such spiritual victories. Choosing in the face of harassment by the material energy. Just like sometimes when you're chanting, aren't you amazed sometimes when you're chanting that the wildest thoughts sometimes come to your mind? Yes? Or sometimes right after you finish chanting, wham, the wildest thoughts just suddenly jump you. What's going on? It's the super soul in the heart giving you a chance to choose. What do you want? This or that? It's all about choice. You remember, you used to do all this stuff? Is this what you want? And then you get the chance to say, no, I'd rather chant Hare Krishna. So in this way, the process of bhakti is building our choice muscles, increasing our strength for choosing Krishna. It's not about renunciation. It's not about enjoyment. It's all about pleasing Krishna, choosing to please Krishna. In Vrindavan, the devotees, the Brijbasis, in Goloka Vrindavan, they have no conception of renunciation or material enjoyment. They simply think of Krishna's senses and how to satisfy them. They don't think of liberation. They just think of Krishna's senses. That's what we're being trained to do in Bhakti Yoga. How to always think of Krishna's senses. What is best for Krishna's pleasure? Don't think lightly of this point. It's the essence of love. Don't think that your efforts, how to think during the day, what's best for Krishna? What can I do best for Krishna now? Don't think that they're so insignificant. Krishna will never notice, so why did you even think that way? Maybe some of you can remember thinking like that. Yeah, I try making an effort to think, what's the best for Krishna's pleasure right now? Should I go here or should I go there? Should I continue this way or should I do that? Should I do this service or that service? Should I yell at this devotee or should I forgive the devotee? And after a while you might think, why should I'm so insignificant. My service is so insignificant. Why should I always have to think what's best for Krishna? I mean, I don't make any difference. What I'm doing doesn't make any real difference. Don't think like that. Everything done by a devotee is noticed by the Supreme Lord. Krishna wants to see you undergo the training process. So, every little time that you try to act for Krishna's pleasure by thinking what's best for Krishna, it all adds up and Krishna notices. And gradually this ability gets stronger and stronger and stronger. It's like a child learning how to walk. Any of you have ever seen little babies trying to walk? All the adults crowd around and just laugh. You see that first step? How stupid. No, the adults are all appreciative. Isn't this so? Rasi, after you, it's like, oh, the first steps of the child. Oh. You didn't just, you know, when Subhadev started to walk, you just didn't gather around, you know, you and your husband just get cynical. I can't walk. Look, you see how stupid that step was. So why do we think Krishna will do that? No. The parents appreciate the first steps of the child. It's like in proper human culture, there's ceremonies. Samskaras reach stage of the child's development. It's like the when a child gets its first grains. So generally, the householders, I like to call the Maharajas, to give the, you know, give the child its first grains. You know, they bring a silver spoon, and you know, and then everyone gathers around with cameras and like that. So, yeah, you know, and so yeah, you know, the Maharajas, you know, trying to, you know, get the spoon in the kid's mouth. And sometimes the kid just. Now, does everybody, you know, get on the kid's case? Get his dumb little baby. No, it's loving, you know, child of a devotee. Happy the parents are wanting to see to the Krishna conscious development of the child. Happy thinking how fortunate the child is to have such devotee parents. Why are we so. Why do we have such an attitude about Krishna that he doesn't care about our first steps? This is impersonalism. What difference does it make to Krishna? Therefore, I won't even bother thinking about Krishna because it makes no difference. This is impersonalism. Little steps turn into big steps. So much of our problem is due to this impersonalism. We don't think Krishna cares. We don't think what we're doing is important enough for Krishna to take attention. And therefore, we think, let me engage in material activities and that'll be important. Or at least, I won't have to delude myself thinking that Krishna notices what I'm doing. I'll just bury myself in the material energy. Take my reactions. I know it's Maya, but I'll just take what I get. Thinking deeply about the process of material activities is very necessary. Life should be molded in such a way that there's ample opportunity for self-reflection in Krishna consciousness. So, always plan how to increase your spiritual life. You'll get your peace that way. Don't succumb to the sirens of material existence saying, material arrangements will bring you peace. No, never happens. Still, it is true that in arranging for the process of bhakti, as devotees develop, we want them to have facility that will lead to their getting peace in Krishna consciousness. So we do pay attention to their material arrangements, but not as the ultimate issue. That is the point. We pay attention to the material arrangements of devotees so that such material arrangements will be favorable for their attaining spiritual peace in Krishna's service. So it's not that we just say, ah, you're a devotee. Doesn't matter what you do, you're a devotee. Live your life this way, that way, you're a devotee. No, we are very attentive to the material arrangements of devotees' affairs, but not as an ultimate issue. This point always has to be remembered. We never say that a devotee will get peace from these material arrangements. What we may say is such material arrangements will make it possible that the devotee can be more peaceful in his quest for the supreme peace. We don't say the material arrangements bring peace. We just say they may facilitate more peaceful development. Ultimately, the peace is only coming from engagement in devotional service. No matter what ashram you're in, you must have spiritual activities. And as long as there are material activities, you'll be kicked by material nature. As the Python Man says here, the actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. You can't have it both ways. Your cup is full of one thing or it's full of another. Now, if the devotee is fully dedicated to Krishna's pleasure, it's obvious you have to take care of the body. If you're a family person, you have to take care of the family. But because Krishna is in the center, these things are not binding. We have to see who's enjoying the results of all the activities. Please think deeply about these points. Any questions? Remember the verse by Lord Brahma in his prayers after the Brahma Vimohana Lila, 14th chapter, 10th canto. He says, Ajnana Sangha Bhava Bandha Moksha. Both liberation and bondage are illusions. It's got nothing to do with the true self. Just like if you're living on the sun, there's no such thing as day or night. Liberation and bondage are artificial states produced by contact with the illusory energy. There's actually nothing for you to become free of. It's just you have to wake up out of the false dream of material existence. It's a very nice example given by Srila Prabhupada in the third canto, that there was a naughty school child. Let's say Sukadeva was being naughty in school. You never do that, right?
Sometimes.
All right. So, let's say the teacher says, Sukadeva, if you go on being naughty, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cut off your head and hang it at the front of the classroom so you can see it. That'll teach you a lesson. What would you say?
I wouldn't believe that.
Why?
Because that's against the law.
But what about the laws of material nature? That's exactly what Maya is doing. Cutting off your head, putting it at the front of the classroom and saying, look at that, see the suffering, see how you're suffering. Now, of course, if your head's cut off, you can't see your head cut off and how you're suffering. But the illusory energy conjures up all that illusion. You're separate from Krishna, and now watch you suffer. See? Happiness, distress, happiness, distress. Do you see it? It's all an illusion managed by the external energy of the Lord. Actually, for the soul, there's no question either of illusion or liberation. There's nothing to be liberated from for the pure soul. So both things are going on at once. The pure glories of the soul and the activity of external energy. Both are realities. Both are energies of Krishna. Now, one energy of Krishna can overcome another energy of Krishna, but no energy can overcome the energetic, the potent. Material existence means that the external energy of the Lord in some strange way is affecting the superior energy of the Lord. Ordinarily, it can't happen except by Krishna's allowing it to happen. Krishna has allowed it to happen so that you'll have a chance to get over your false dreams of independence and you'll choose properly. That's the nature of material existence. Another example given by Maitreya in answer to Vidura's questions is that the moon in the sky, it doesn't quiver. But when the moon reflects onto a body of water, that reflection of the moon in the water quivers because of contact with the water. Similarly, the spirit soul, because of contact with the material energy, quivers. But the spirit soul actually shouldn't quiver. Just like the reflection on the water of the moon and the moon in the sky, they should both be equal and not quivering. Similarly, the spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, shouldn't quiver, but because of contact with material nature, it goes on. No questions.